Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, April the 16th. And I'm looking forward to your participation as we post-mortem the Don Imus firing last week for his racist and sexist comments about the Rutgers women basketball team. And we will also look to the future. Will this lead to a more civil discourse in this country, or will it lead to a suppression of free speech? Who or what will be the next target? Is this a good thing or not, as far as you're concerned? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We welcome your thoughts and your questions for our guest, our friend Dave Berkman, former host of Wisconsin Public Radio's Media Talk, a retired professor of mass communications at UW Milwaukee. Good morning, Dave.
Morning.
So did it surprise you when CBS fired Don Imus last week?
No. MSNBC having done it because of strong support to do that from women and black staffers, once they did that, CBS had no choice. But, you know, at first I was thinking, you know, maybe as a result of Imus being canned, maybe we'll stop giving free pass to the other racist haters, you know, Rush, Hannity, Michael Savage, Lou Dobbs, Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
But over the weekend, I came to the conclusion that the firing of Imus was a mistake because of the precedent it sets.
Why?
You have to ask, where does it stop? There was Reverend Jackson talking about the offense that white mainstream media journalists have committed by referring to the New Orleans residents as victims rather than survivors. Do we now demand those who use the term victims be fired? And I think what those of us on the left had better start asking is, what about the license this precedent gives the right-wingers? Saturday on a Des Moines radio station, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, a GOP presidential candidate, was demanding that if the left can get Imus fired, then at least half of those reporting or commenting on TV and radio have to go, starting with Rosie and Bill Maher. And for what? Maher refuses to give sanctimonious support to our military for expressing his atheist views in this most theocratic Western nation. And
yeah.
the thing I keep wondering about, and I counted this many times during my years on both guesting and hosting on WPR, where do we get this idea that the concept of free expression doesn't apply to anything that offends somebody? And the worst thing, though, is that we see Sharpton and Jackson demanding that the FCC step in, which would make this a First Amendment matter, in order to decide what isn't permissible. I mean, do liberals really want a government agency, especially a Republican-appointed FCC, to decide what is or isn't permissible?
Yeah.
Most Americans, I can tell you, would be far more tolerant of an Imus or a Rush than of Rosie, of Maher, and Jackson and Sharpton themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Look, there's one answer here. Not to demand that we get rid of people, but that we allow more people in, that there be balance, there be more Obermans and Mars to contradict the Rushes and the Michael Savages.
I'm wondering, Dave, if you think this is what Imus said was different because he went after these young college athletes who should have been lauded but instead were insulted and they were powerless with quotes, whereas Rush Limbaugh, in some of what he has said, it's been noted that he has called Barack Obama a Hafrican.
Yes.
That's different. You know, Obama can take care of himself.
Once those 10 incredible ladies, eight of them black, plus the black coach, went on and made that, you know, and started saying, "We are somebody's daughters," I mean, that was all over. It was all over. But that made it somewhat different. Look, what really made Imus different was that somehow he was insulated in a car, in a cocoon, surrounded by literally the most important political figures and journalists in the United States. They got a lot out of him. They sold books through him. They simply laughed along with him when he made those comments. There's a story that's gotten a lot of attention about how Clarence Page, the syndicated Chicago Tribune editorial board member and columnist, when he was he had been a regular guest on the show, and sometime in 2000, after Imus had made one of his racist comments, he said to him, "Look, I want you to take a pledge: no more taking off on black athletes, on blacks who haven't committed any crimes, on gays, whatever." And Sharpton repeated that pledge. The result was that Clarence Page was never asked back. And if that wasn't a lesson to even the high and mighty that they dare not take issue with him, mm-hmm. I don't know what. We allowed a bully to take control, and not a bully who we all know is a bully like Rush, but a guy whose political sympathies really are left, mm-hmm. or at least far more liberal.
We're going to check our weather forecast. Our lines are full already. We are talking about the fallout from the Don Imus firing last week. His career with CBS Radio is over, but the debate over what he said and how it was handled and the implications of this story continues. We're talking with Dave Berkman, who will answer your questions, respond to your views. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, about 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, April the 16th. Peter Donald's in for Ben Marins this afternoon, and after 5, Peter's guest will take us into the world of robot technology, and we'll demonstrate why robotics is an emerging and vital new movement. That's coming up after 5 this afternoon. We're talking with Dave Berkman. He is former host of Wisconsin Public Radio's Media Talk, a retired professor of mass communications at UW-Milwaukee, and a regular guest now on Wisconsin Public Radio talking about media issues in the news. And the issue that's been in the news for the past week, dominating the news, is Don Imus's comments and his firing. We're talking about the fallout from all of that, welcoming your views and reactions. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Brian in Onalaska is first. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Good morning, everybody. I listen to ESPN Radio a lot, and there's a show host on there named Colin Cowherd, and he made the point last week that when Les Moonves come out with a statement that CBS was offended after Imus made the comments, why did it take him 8 days to fire Imus until the advertisers started dropping away when Tim Hardaway made comments concerning gay people that he did previous this year? ESPN fired him within 45 minutes.
Okay, so we wait 8 days to fire somebody and we don't guillotine them immediately. Where did it stop?
He was pointing out the discrepancy between Moonves' comment that CBS was offended after Imus made the comments, but yet it took him 8 days to fire him, and only until after advertisers started dropping off.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. The major reason here, mm-hmm. or at least a co-equal major reason, I believe NBC head Steve Kappas, NBC News head Steve Kappas, when he says that the straw that broke his camel's back, if you can pardon a terrible mixed metaphor there, was that the black and women staffers were indignantly demanding the firing.
Well, in fact, Keith Olbermann announced on his program, Dave, that after MSNBC announced that it was ending the Imus simulcast, that he was one of the employees who was also hammering away at management there to drop the show.
I want to tell you, there are two people in broadcasting who I respect more mm-hmm. than Keith Olbermann and the show. What's his name?
Harry Shearer.
Harry Shearer. Mm-hmm. And there was Olbermann asking and Shearer getting up on on Olbermann's show on Friday night, both making this absurd claim. Yes, there is a First Amendment, but but that doesn't give license for hate speech. What else doesn't it give license to? I mean, you know, the ACLU 25 years ago, and that's supposed to be this big liberal lefty organization, went out on a limb, lost over almost half of its revenues when it came out and supported the right of Nazis to march in Skokie.
Yeah.
The First Amendment doesn't say except in the case of offensive comments, except in the case of naughty stuff, except in the case of racism. Now, while right now this is not a First Amendment issue, this is strictly the private sector, let me suggest to you, it raises some serious questions about the concept of censorship and free expression.
Let me ask you to give me your take on this, Dave. Why did the advertisers bolt this time and not when Imus called Gwen Ifill, an African-American news anchor for PBS, a cleaning woman back in the late 80s?
Well, he wasn't that big a figure back. That was in 88, I believe. And, he wasn't such a major figure back then. But there have been far more recent, even worse things that he's done that he got this free pass on. And I would go back to what I said earlier about this protective cocoon. The most important figures in the media were beholden to him. And they stomached this. They laughed along with him.
Yeah. Well, we have lots of other callers. So let me go to Renee next in Zion, Illinois. Hi, you're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
How you doing? I was basically... because I'm a woman, yes, and I'm African-American. And I'm glad that they fired him. It was the most disgusting thing I've ever heard. And a lot of the people are saying, like, this is a mistake just because he wasn't referring to their daughter specifically when he said nappy-headed and jigaboo. It was, wasn't a problem. You know, and basically they needed to do that because if they let him do that, other people are going to want to do it. You know, basically this intolerance is going to keep going, and it's not right. And the FCC should have fined both networks. He should have been fired, and they need to sue him for defamation of character.
Where do you draw the line?
As far as I'm concerned.
What do you think would happen? How many times do you think then we would be firing radio, TV stations that carry Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson?
I tell you what, I don't know, but I've never heard Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton call somebody's daughters like, excuse me, a honky or something like that, or a cracker.
Oh, then let me tell you.
You know, because
What would you say about when Sharpton once said, when he was objecting to Jewish merchants in Harlem, talking about how some rabbi who attacked him for making those attacks, he then said he ought to shove his yarmulke up his you-know-where.
You know, I've never heard him say
that. He said
that. And if he did say that, if he did say that, you know, well, two wrongs don't make a right. And so they should have dropped him, too, because nonetheless, sexism and racism on the public airwaves is offensive to anybody. Whoever says whatever, they need to go. Don Imus said what he said. It was the most egregious thing I've ever heard anybody say. He needed to go.
It was
he
horrible.
He needed to go. Because if you don't have discipline to say something, if you have an opinion,
where does
and
the
to
First
control
Amendment
your...
call for discipline? Where does the concept of free speech say we support the idea of free expression as long as it is disciplined? We have the concept of free expression inherently says not we're going to support nice, safe, respectable speech, but offensive speech.
Yeah. So everything goes, Dave?
I would say so, yeah. But we need more of everything. That is the problem. We need more Obermans. We need more Mars. We don't need necessarily fewer Michael Savages. Hey, you want to talk about the biggest hater, and I think he has the fifth most stations lined up around the country. It's Michael Savage, this guy. Is unbelievable. He makes Don Imus sound like a saint.
Yeah, I thought he did get fired recently.
About 2 years, three mm-hmm. years ago, he had a one-hour spot on Saturday afternoons on MSNBC, and he made some incredibly offensive remark about homosexuals, and that was the straw that broke that camel's back.
But he keeps his radio gig.
Here in Milwaukee, he's on every night from... on a delayed basis from midnight or from 11 till 2.
Renee, thank you so very much for calling. Carl in Chippewa Falls is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. As an American veteran that's fought and defended our rights, actually I've sacrificed, as many others have, I feel that these rights have always been stretched to the limit. I think that people have to remember that this country was built in God We Trust. if you remember, the main word that God ever wanted to put across to everyone was to treat others the way you'd want to be treated. If you think about that before you speak, I think you wouldn't hurt a lot. You'd hurt a lot less people out there.
Well, I guess a lot more people should think that way, although not all of us necessarily believe in or trust in God. But again, I think you have a right. The First Amendment does not make exceptions, such as except for the naughty stuff or the hate speech or what offends somebody.
Well, I'd like to add one note to that. And if you don't believe in our rights and if you don't believe in God we trust, then leave my country.
Cause that's okay, that's what democracy is. If you leave it or love it. Love it or leave it.
Carrie, don't interrupt me here.
Okay.
What I was saying was, if you don't feel the way we feel, and if you don't believe in what we believe, you should leave our country.
How do we differ then from
our country? As Americans, we defend the honor of what our forefathers wrote out for us.
How do we differ then from Soviet Russia?
And on our own soil to defend the rights that our forefathers wrote out for us. Okay. And that freedom of speech, as well as many other freedoms, are being stretched to the limit that they don't mean anything, they don't stand for anything. We need to go back, we need to read our Constitution, we need to understand what our rights were written out for, and then therefore we have a nice, much more comfortable living environment.
Okay, so how would that differ from what obtained in the Soviet Union or in Saddam's Iraq, where we all had to pretty much agree not to offend, to go along with the country, to honor the military? What is democracy then? What is left by way of the possibilities of disagreement or dissent?
No, excuse me, but we are America, okay? Your government is not America.
Well, we just lost you, Carl. That was not me censoring anybody, but we lost your cell phone. We'll ponder that as we go on to Victor in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, Mr. Berkman.
Howdy.
I identify myself. I'm a black man. I'm in Milwaukee, but I have a different approach to this. And
sure.
The way I'm getting rid of him, to me, it just suppresses the problem. I know he was offensive and everything, but this is my take on this. I want to know who my enemies out there. You know, let the KKK, the Nazis, the skinheads, Mike from Michigan on shortwave, let them pull out this derogatory drama because they are lightning rods. Because you have to keep in mind who the audience is that listens to this. And these are Americans who have probably the same prejudice and racist point of views or derogatory remarks as these lightning rods are. So let them be on the airwaves. I want to know who my enemies are.
You don't have a different point of view from me. That's exactly... that is exactly what I'm saying. If a majority of Americans had their choice, believe me, it would be the Jacksons and the Sharptons, people who I tend to find myself far more in agreement with, certainly than the Imuses or the Rush Limbaughs, who would be the ones to go. It's a two-edged sword. You and I are in perfect agreement. And you're right. Let's stop keeping the racism that is so endemic in white America hidden. There is some value in the Michael Savages and the Rush Limbaughs getting on the air and expressing it openly.
We're going to check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking with Dave Berkman, talking about the Don Imus story and its implications. And we'll continue after this check of the news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Monday, April the 16th. And we continue to post-mortem the Don Imus firing last week, talking with Dave Berkman, former host of Wisconsin Public Radio's Media Talk, a retired professor of mass communications at UW-Milwaukee. And with you, our lines are full at the moment, but if you would, someone just dropped off, so you can get in at 1-800-642-1234 or 263-1890. We're wondering whether or not the firing of Don Imus was a good thing or not. Will this lead to a more civil discourse in this country, or will it chill free speech? Who or what might be next? We welcome your thoughts and questions for Dave Berkman. Bernie in Whitewater, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I want to make 2 points. The first is passed along from my wife, who has been and is an Imus fan, has watched him for years on MSNBC and listened to him before. Being that MSNBC, there was bad blood between Imus and MSNBC prior to any of this. He had a crusade going against the mercury in vaccines that was offending pharmaceutical companies, and he had made it clear that he was told to desist from this campaign. Also, he had become increasingly anti the Iraq occupation, and people like John McCain, who were regulars on the show, weren't coming on so often. And we know MSNBC isn't too happy with people that are anti-war. That's point one. Point two is that this whole thing, you know, people like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, their bread and butter is the politics of divide by race. And I've never heard them get so upset about the lack of national health or anything like that. These people are opportunists. Imus is not a racist. It was an ill-conceived joke. People take themselves way too seriously. And, you know, this whole thing, he's helped people of all colors at his ranch, children with cancer. If you've ever heard people who believe he's a racist and equate him with, you know, the head of the KKK or whoever, have not listened to the show. The man is, you know, I never cared for him that much except when he had a good guy like George Carlin on. But, you know, he basically was not intending any harm, but people are taking themselves so seriously. And then you get these people whose bread and butter is the politics of race. I agree with Bill Maher on his show Friday night. You know, these people on the basketball team wouldn't even have heard of Don Imus if it weren't for the big fuss that was made. It's preposterous.
Reaction, Dave?
Well, I basically disagree with everything that was said, this idea that somehow MSNBC is part of a conspiracy to suppress something about vaccines, to charge MSNBC, which has the foremost critic of the Iraqi occupation in Keith Olbermann on the air, and they're promoting him like crazy. Just gave him a 5-year contract, $4 million a year, to say that that they are against people who do not support the war. I mean, that was true 5 years ago when they fired Donahue. That is absurd. And I would point out that in their presidential campaigns, both Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson came out strongly for universal health care. That was a major plank in both of their platforms.
Yeah. You know, Dave, you were saying that the answer here is to allow more viewpoints. And I'm wondering what you think about Jesse Jackson's call for MSNBC and other national broadcasters to have more African Americans in their newsrooms or on the air as hosts.
Yeah, well, first of all, he was wrong when he stated there is none, and I'm surprised that Olbermann didn't immediately pick him up when he made that charge.
Yeah, mentioned Allison Stewart fills in for him.
Yes, but she's not just filling in. Mm-hmm. She does the most every day. It's on at 11 o'clock our time, and I think this woman is the brightest, sharpest, not to mention hottest female newscaster on the internet.
Didn't get in trouble, Dave.
I know. But she is absolutely brilliant. She has a razor-sharp wit and mind that justifies belief.
Yeah. So there is Allison Stewart on MSNBC, but right. Is that should we have more African-American hosts?
Absolutely. You know, for a while we had, what was his name?
I forgot it, too. CNN.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, there clearly is a deficit of people of color represented in the ranks of the major reporters, the anchors, and the commentators on the major networks in general.
Yeah, there's a piece in the Wall Street Journal today about how it's not going to be easy to replace Imus, that CBS is struggling in replacing Howard Stern after he bolted to satellite radio.
Right.
I mean, they've even replaced some of his replacements. So it's not, I guess it's not an easy thing to do.
Well, these guys it's the cult of personality radio. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to, it wasn't that easy to come up with the next, Charlie Chaplin.
Mm-hmm. We'll go next to Sarah in Oshkosh. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm just calling. I have a point to raise with your guests, and I guess with everyone. There's a lot of talk about free speech and this worry about, protecting free speech. And, with good reason, but I would like to make the important distinction between taking legal action against somebody like Imus and what has happened in this case, which is some sort of, it seems to me more like a public reprimand when advertisers pull off out of the show and then he's fired. You know, nobody sued him yet that I know of. And so that, yeah, that's the distinction I'd like to make.
It was a community reprimand, Dave.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure of the point that you, this distinction that you are attempting to delineate.
No one has taken legal action against him. Used the law.
What would be the legal action?
I guess to sue him or.
For what?
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
That's what I'd like to see. You know, nobody has used the Constitution.
The Constitution doesn't say you can sue for offending somebody.
Right. Oh, I guess I'm just trying to say that. The free speech issue is one. You know,
it wasn't. It wasn't some sort of government suppression of free speech, Dave. Maybe that's the distinction.
This was not a First Amendment issue, as long as it stayed within the private sector.
Right. Well, but I've been saying is this: does this chill free speech? And we're using the word free speech. This wasn't a case of government suppression of free speech.
Yeah. Does it chill free speech? That's the only point I've been making. Mm-hmm. Look, censorship is censorship. Whether it's censorship by government, which would be a violation of the First Amendment, as would be the case if the FCC were to enter this, or if it's done by the private sector responding to advertiser concerns and whatnot. Censorship is wrong. I don't care what its genesis is.
Yeah, and Sarah, was that the distinction you were trying to make?
Yep, that's all.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Anne in Decorah is with us now. Hi, Anne, you're on the air.
Good morning. I was just wondering, can we have no expectations? I mean, there's such a lack of tolerance anymore. In my lifetime, Don Rickles was like one of the first very rude comedians, and Magnificent Seven was just such a horrifically violent movie, and Valley of the Dolls was such an extremely racy movie, and I'm sure if you went back now and looked, there's nothing compared to what's out there now. I mean, are we just on a downward spiral
civility? I'd say we're on an upward spiral. We've expanded what is permissible. If you don't like it, you have the right not to listen to it. But don't tell me I can't listen or watch it.
But what if it's reflected in manners out, I mean, courtesy and everything, doesn't it make the day a little easier? Like highway signs. Isn't courtesy and manners somewhat like a highway sign?
We always should, have courtesy and manners, but that should not be the criteria by which we judge what is, first of all, who defines what is acceptable by way of mannerly or sensitive conduct? Once we start requiring that everybody adhere to a be nice philosophy in what they express, we may all walk around with smiles on our face, but there isn't very much we're going to be free to say or express.
Yeah, so then, putting the shoe on the other foot, Dave, you think MSNBC should not have canned Michael Savage for his TV show for his anti-gay comments?
What it finally comes down to is, yes, they should not. They ought to have then followed him with an hour host. Harvey Fierstein, the gay actor, who had a wonderful column on this issue, by the way, more or less saying the same thing I was saying in the New York Times, I think last Thursday.
Dave Berkman is our guest. He is a retired professor of mass communications at UW-Milwaukee, former host of Wisconsin Public Radio's Media Talk, and we're talking Don Imus and his firing, what it means, and where do we go from here? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to The Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. It's 13 minutes before 7 o'clock right now, and after 7, we will talk with Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson. And after 7:30, we'll be talking with U.S. Representative Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. We'll talk about a lot of things, but we'll focus primarily on the state and national ramifications of the Georgia Thompson case and whether a U.S. attorney in Milwaukee prosecuted this state worker due to political pressure or not. And we'll talk about the Wisconsin link to that U.S. attorneys scandal coming up in our next hour in our state capitol report. Back to the phones for Dave Berkman talking about Don Imus. Jerry in Genesee Depot is next. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I'm having my weekly laugh for an early start. I've never heard Don Imus, but I did read a translation of a few albums that some of these black artists have put out denigrating their own race. Makes me kind of wonder why they're incensed about this. They still keep buying them. And secondly, when you get away from Milwaukee and read about the problems with illegitimate births in that minority community, and the word used correctly pronounced, which is something most people don't do very well, I guess, in that area, you kind of wonder who's wrong and who's right.
Are you saying that most black women, therefore, are hoes?
No, but they paint that whole group with the same brush, unfortunately, in any group, whether it's Jewish or black or German or whatever, for the bad actors of a few. And certainly these basketball players, I wouldn't classify that way. But unfortunately, they're under that same scope.
And that, and I think you're saying, and I would agree with you, that to paint everybody with the same brush because of what in some instances a few do, or let's talk about unwed mothers. 80% of the births in Milwaukee, I think it's number one in the nation, to black women are unmarried women. You know, that's a fact. Do we then start calling everybody hoes? I mean, look at what we do to black men. We disproportionately put them in prisons.
Right.
And we ruin their economic opportunities.
Definitely.
But,
hey,
Jerry,
just an indicator.
What's so funny? You said you're getting your morning laugh. What's so
funny?
Well,
I laugh at the fact that people are laughing at Don Imus, not laughing. They're mad at him. And yet, within their own community, they're using this same language. What do they expect other people to think?
I think this is a point a lot of people are raising, and a lot of people have attacked Sharpton and Jackson for not making that point. And those people who attack those two for that are dead wrong. If there is any one thing that Jackson and Sharpton have been absolutely consistent about over the last dozen years or so, it is the harmful effects of a rap culture that absolutely trivializes, demeans, dismisses all black women.
Yeah. So we should somehow censor it out of rap music, Dave?
No, but wouldn't it be nice if, let's say, BET gave a little more attention to rap songs or other black artistic genres that do not engage in this? Look, Bob Johnson, the guy who founded and controlled BET until it was bought by CBS Viacom about 5 or 6 years ago. When he was interviewed on one of the cable talk shows, I forget which one last week, he was very indignant about all of this terribly demeaning rap. And when the question was posed to him by the host, well, who is more responsible for spreading this than BET? I couldn't believe his answer. He said, well, I often spoke to record company executives and told them I'd be glad to carry rap songs that weren't demeaning. He did not say, I often talked to those record company executives and said, we're not going to play this stuff anymore.
Thanks, Jerry, for the call. Next, we go to Orville in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Everybody who brings up this issue brings up Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. They have nothing to do with it.
They had everything to do with it.
They don't have anything to do with it. Just listen to me.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that you and Mike Wallace and Bob Schieffer are defending Don Imus. I am not an American, but I'm a black person.
Mm-hmm.
And what Imus did is deeply offensive to all black people everywhere.
Right.
And Americans used to use words like nips and jabs and chinks and kikes.
Mm-hmm.
And they stopped using it because there's a consequence.
Mm-hmm.
They keep persecuting black people because there's no consequence. How would you like somebody to go up and shoot Don Imus in the head because he insulted black people? Is that what you want?
Of course not. Why would you make that inference?
Well, this is what happened in Wisconsin. There was a mong person who was insulted by some white people in northern Wisconsin during the hunting season, and he shot them. He shot six of them.
Right.
Okay. This kind of thing must stop. It's been going on for years and centuries, and black people are tired of it. We're tired of being put down and being regarded as being non-human, and our physical features are not human, or hair or skin. We're tired of it.
Jesse Jackson
and the media has nothing to do with it. It's a racism in the culture. And
racism has been the overriding reality of America historically, contemporaneously. Racism in this country, anti-black racism in this country, is absolutely endemic.
You have not heard
me say one word in defense of what I'm talking about his right to say it.
Well, we're tired of it.
Something is going to happen.
Something is going to happen. We're tired of it.
Maybe we will then end up by electing Barack Obama, whose rally I'm going to.
Barack Obama tonight. Has nothing to do with it.
Okay, nothing. Sharpton, Obama,
white,
none of this have anything to do with the status of blacks in America.
It's white racism that goes back from slavery, and it's time for it to end.
Right, and I think we ought to pay reparations. I'm with you completely. Believe me, I'm with you on these things. I just don't think that therefore justifies suppressing the speech of those who express hate.
Yeah. You know, Dave, there have been discussions on whether the IMUS firing ends the debate over this or whether it will continue productively.
One of the most absurd things that I've heard out of this is how this is going to start a dialogue about race. Look, if Katrina couldn't do it, this isn't. Caller is absolutely right. As a white guy, let me tell you, we cannot overestimate the degree to which racism is endemic among the white population in America. To that degree, the caller is right. We should be concerned. Because of that endemic racism, nobody really wants to pick up on this. And you really can't. The situation is so bad you can't hold a discussion. If you ever read Eugene Cain's column, he often talks about the hate calls he gets from whites who disagree with him. You cannot engage in a dialogue with people like that.
We had Eugene Cain on the program last week on Thursday, and he wasn't calling for the firing of Don Imus.
Right.
Frank in Port Edwards, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, folks.
Morning.
I just have one idea all the way through this thing. I've been listening to this fuss for quite a while. I believe that Imus could have said what he said if he were speaking about black women basketball players in general, but because it was seen to be directed at this very fine Rutgers team, it was seen as picking on and bullying, and people don't like that. And I think that inspired more activity against Don Imus than a remark would have been if he just directed it at female black basketball players in general.
Why would we assume that young black women in college studying for degrees, and by the way, if you look at NCAA statistics, the graduation rate among black female basketball players is incredibly high. Why would we assume that those at Duke or Tennessee, to take two other outstanding teams, would fit that kind of opprobrious racist descriptor, but just not the women from Rutgers? I frankly don't buy into what you're saying.
No, I don't think you understand what I'm saying.
Apparently not.
You said if they made it about basketball players in general, but
he could have gotten away with that. He would not have been fired for that.
Well, how about if he's saying that because I think it was more that it was directed to the basketball team, a college basketball team, and the reference to everybody's daughter came up, Dave. What if it was just a black women in general as opposed
to... Well, that's my point. What I'm hearing is if you pick out one college, that's wrong. But if you apply it generally to all the black basketball players,
female players in college ball, that would somehow diffuse it, or
right.
possibly make it, you know, maybe even lighter. I don't find that. Now, where I think the caller is correct has to do with the fact that once these women went on TV and spoke in the way that they mm-hmm. spoke and raised the points that they raised, I mean, you listen to the accomplishments of these women, one of them apparently a concert-level pianist, and I could go on and on, a
yeah.
number pre-law, pre-med.
But we're out of time, so we
yeah.
can't go on and on. Dave, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll talk again soon.
Okay.
Dave Berkman, former host of Wisconsin Public Radio's Media Talk, a retired professor of mass communications at UW-Milwaukee. We thank him for talking with us about the Don Imus fallout. We thank Leo Duran for producing the hour and Karen Prager for on-air production. And for you for listening, I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.